Leah, my early reaction was that this was the Jordan Luplo revenge game after a two-run shot off Bassett to start things off. He robs Danny Jansen of a great hit, 108 miles an hour off the bat for Jano to start this game. Luplo makes a sliding grab to stop him, but ultimately, by the end of it, like with most spring games, wins or losses, it's less about the score and more about the singular outings for each player, whether they are starters or on the fringe. So for the Braves, definitely great for Luplo, but still some positives that we can get to, whether it's from Bassett or any of the relievers, perhaps some guys we can talk about when it comes to battles for the last couple spots, maybe the last individual spot in the bullpen, and some nice plays from, of all people, on today of all days, IKF.
So first of all, it seems like spring training games are always a saga, right?
Yes.
The way that it starts is never the way that it ends. And the turnover is akin to the cast of Grey's Anatomy. You never know who's coming in. You never know who's coming out. And it starts off with us noting Jordan Luplo, and it ends in a completely different note. But you're right, Sho, that IKF, who we discussed at length pregame here, did a good job at third base today. Not a ton to talk about offensively, but we saw a very difficult high-level play there from him early on in the game, making the catch, flipping it to first base to Vladimir Guerrero Jr., and really, you know, holding his own. I'm sure that we will discuss as well his interview with Buck and Ben during the game, and it seems very clear to me that he is pretty invested, Sho, in what the Blue Jays are trying to do here. He's all in on this. He's excited to be here, and so to see a guy like that have success on the day where, you know, we're talking more about Matt Chapman signing elsewhere, it's got to feel good for him.
That's Julia Kreutz. I'm Sho Ali. You're, of course, listening to Jay's Talk on the Sportsnet Radio Network. We're on sportsnet.ca and on the Sportsnet app as well. Shoot us a text, 590-590, name and location. We'll get to those in the next couple of minutes as we get to a number of observations until just past the top of the hour from the Jays 6-2 loss to the Braves in Dunedin. Yeah, like in IKF making a couple of nice plays on the diamond. And this text actually about IKF from Eddie in Fort Erie, our pal.
Let's hear it.
Eddie says, out of the three outs IKF made today, the first one was my favorite, the slow roller. He was playing deep. I hope he stays there. Out of all the guys who are going to play third base, he has the gold glove playing that position. It is true. And you know, it's funny because I think Buck and Ben did mention this to IKF, and he kind of brought it up on his own too during that interview. But he said he essentially talked about how he hasn't had a chance to play a lot of third base a ton since he won the gold glove in 2020, which was with the Rangers. And then he got traded, and he mentioned it as well. He got traded for like a single day, like not even 24 hours, to the Twins, and then was traded again to the Yankees, where he spent the last couple of years. In the wake of Chapman signing with the Giants, and we will get to that a little bit later on, we do think that IKF is perhaps the starting third baseman for this team. He was asked about this by Ben Schulman. And before we continue, I wanted to play this for us, for all the listeners, Julia. Then we can continue chatting some IKF. So this is him chatting with Ben and Buck earlier today.
Isaiah, you've played in so many different spots. What was the discussion like for your role with the Blue Jays coming into this season? What kind of positions did they want to see you in, according to what they've said?
Definitely just be ready to cover everywhere. But at the same time, you know, third base was an opportunity. I never got to play third base after I won my gold glove in 2020. So I'm excited to get an opportunity to get back there. And, yeah, I mean, I feel the most natural there, and I don't really have to do any thinking. I just feel like it brings the best out of me when I play third. And but at the same time, I'm ready to play left, play center, short if Bo needs a day, second. So I'm ready to do anything I need to do to help this team.
So that answer from IKF, Julia, to me likely implies, much like they do for a bunch of positions, the team is more than happy to move him around and get others in there, whether it's perhaps Kevin Biggio on a day he needs off, or a day IKF is needed elsewhere in the infield or even in the outfield, as he said, or Elvis Martinez a little bit later on. But we did see, as Eddie points out, some decent plays from IKF at the hot corner and the couple of outs he was needed out there for. So, you know, again, it's not what you wanted, and he is perhaps more of a super utility player. But I thought I was relatively speaking impressed with what we saw, given we haven't seen a ton from IKF in the spring so far.
He certainly looked very comfortable, and like he said, it's the position that comes naturally to him. It's the one that he has to think the least about when he's playing, and it really did show. There's just an affinity there we saw with the three so really good highlight defensive plays that he made today, it seems like there's a level of comfort that is there for him. And not just that, but there's also the skill and the technique that comes with preparation, right? He didn't seem flustered out there. He didn't seem like anything was surprising him. Very well positioned, and that will come from just preparation. And it seems like IKF has a leg up in that department. It's also extremely valuable that he is so keen on, you know, sliding into whatever position the Blue Jays need out of him. There's a reason why he went and learned how to play center field, right? Last year with the Yankees, or 2 years ago with the Yankees. This is a guy that wants to be on the field. He wants to be contributing, and he wants to be on a team that is winning right now. That is a point that he made when he signed with the Blue Jays in his introductory media conference. Said, listen, I want to be on a team where I can win. I listened to offers from other clubs, but this is where I ended up because I believe in what we're doing here. And so for him to come in with that mentality, play as well as he did on a day like today, and still say, listen, I'm open to whatever, I will do whatever the team wants me to do, that has got to put him in a good position to carve out a daily role, at least early on in the season, more so than a bench role.
He did also say he was very effusive in his praise of a lot of his teammates, including of Bo Bichette. He actually went out of his way to highlight the plays Bo makes defensively. I thought that was pretty interesting. And one of the things we've talked about over the course of the spring, Julie, and a lot of people have discussed this point, the idea of Bo being the leader of this team. And it went back to hearing his words when he was chatting with Blair and Barker when they had the interview with Bo shortly after UFC 297 here in Toronto, because Bo was here for that event. And it was just really interesting hearing him like shoulder a lot of the responsibility. And that has been kind of a common thread through the early days of spring, because, you know, there was that quote, he kind of stood up in the locker room and said, we need to be better. And he was talking about, oh, they're being doubted. It's the first time they're being doubted. So we've heard a lot about Bo, the leader. And it was interesting to hear a lot of guys, including Justin Turner, who has spoken to the media a couple times in Dunedin, and then certainly IKF today, a lot of these guys talk like going out of their way to highlight the leader Bo has become, which I think is like, it can't not be a good thing. You know what I mean? Like it can't otherwise be anything but good, only because we often ask the question, like, who is the leader of this team? If there is any, and maybe sometimes it feels like there isn't one, but Bo to me unquestionably is that guy. So it was cool to hear IKF kind of support that idea.
Yeah. And it's interesting too, because, you know, I interviewed Bo last year and I asked him, what does that mean to you? What does being a leader mean to you? And he said, well, the number one thing is I want to be available for my teammates. So they need to know that they can come to me, whether it's about the game, whether it's about their personal life or whatever it is. I'm available. I'm approachable. I'm here. And he's not going to be always a super vocal guy. Bo is more on the quiet side. He's more of a lead by example. I'm going to show up early and I'm going to do my job. And seeing that being recognized by, you know, guys that have been around for a while, such as Turner and IKF. First of all, it's got to feel very good for Bo to get that recognition. But also it means that when it comes to leadership, the Blue Jays are in pretty good hands. They're right in a very, very good position. And it seems like Bo is ready to take another step forward in that way and continue to learn from the veteran guys in that clubhouse.
It'll be good to see how that continues to translate early in the spring, although I don't think anyone is really all that worried about Bo Bichette because he was one of the few really consistent players last year. So not a lot of worry there, certainly. Before we get on to some things from today's ballgame, I did want to ask you, how surprised were you on Matt Chapman's deal with the Giants? When you saw that, I guess, last night, $54 million, 3 years, opt-outs after each of the first two seasons, $20 million in 2024, $18 in 2025, $16 in 2026. Were you surprised? Because you and I talked about this last week, and, you know, I think we both thought it was very possible that he re-signs with the Blue Jays, and instead he's heading to San Fran.
Yeah, I believe my first reaction was, oh, finally, right? We did wait a little bit for a Matt Chapman to come off the board. I can't say that I was necessarily surprised by the deal show, because I was very surprised by the Cody Bellinger.
Sure, okay.
Right? The 3 year, very similar contract that Bellinger signed with the Cubs, with opt-outs after the first two seasons for a similar amount of money. And that took me a little bit by surprise because of the type of season that Bellinger did have in 2023. And I thought, okay, this is a guy that is poised for a big contract. When he signed that to basically, you know, a bridge deal there with the Cubs, then it became evident that Matt Chapman might find himself in a similar situation. Did it surprise me that he went to the Giants? Maybe a little bit. You would think that the Giants would focus a little bit more on pitching right now. And it seemed like the Blue Jays were a good fit for, say, a bridge deal like that, a three-year deal with a couple of opt-outs for the player so that the player can, you know, bet on himself and try to produce better numbers and get that big contract at the end of this season or next season. It seemed like the Blue Jays were going to be a good team, a good partner in that sense, just because of where they are when it comes to their infield talent, when it comes to a guy like Aurelvis Martinez, who might be close to being ready, but is not all the way there. And that is mostly what, if there was an element of surprise here, that was it more so than the nature of the contract, the length of it, or the money. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah. I think it does make sense. And I think for me, the reaction to Chapman not signing with the Blue Jays was not surprising, because I think a lot of people wanted, it's like, you know, that meme that where it's like the guy poking something with a stick and he's like, come on, do something. I think that's how you feel about the Blue Jays or have felt about them for much of the offseason. But you watch Chapman signing with the Giants when you think he could have fit very well for the Blue Jays and have made IKF more of the super utility guy, which he obviously outlined himself in the clip we just heard. But I think for me, I don't blame anyone, any front office in baseball for not anticipating the slow off season. But I do somewhat find fault in no teams, and the Giants were the ones who ended up blinking first, but no teams, including the Blue Jays, not once they realized the off season was being like trickled out, you know, signings were happening slow, very being slow played, let's call it, to this extent that they didn't pivot, I suppose. And again, maybe it has to do with money. Maybe Chapman just didn't want to sign here. Like, we'll probably never know, honestly, what Chapman thinks until he's retired, I would imagine. But I was disappointed to see the dollars that this deal entails for him, because I think it's a pretty team-friendly deal for the Giants. And for sure, you would think that the Jays would have been able to match it. But unfortunately, Chapman off to San Fran. And you had mentioned this to me in the pregame, but that San Francisco is pretty much right next to Oakland, where he has spent a large chunk of his career, probably didn't hurt either.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
And he's from the West Coast, too.
If you are from the West Coast, and if you like that lifestyle, then that's definitely a huge plus when looking at where to sign. You and I spoke a little bit about Blake Snell, too, and maybe he wants to be in the West Coast,
yeah,
right?
From Seattle. Yeah.
There you go. So there's a lot more than just money or term to consider. Obviously, you know, those are big parts of a free agent's decision, but the lifestyle, the proximity to family, to friends, that all of it, you know, goes into it. So Chapman should fit right into San Francisco. I feel like that will be an exciting player to watch this year as well.
Who knows? Maybe that means J.D. Davis out there is available. We'll have to keep an eye on that. All right, let's get to some things from today's ballgame outside of IKF, including Danny Jansen, RBI single. I mentioned he'd gotten robbed, Julia, earlier in the game on the 108-mile-an-hour liner that Luplo kind of made a nice grab. He slid under it to rob Jano of a hit. He did obviously have an RBI single as well, slapping it down the line on the left field later on as well. What are your expectations for Jansen? Like, or maybe a better question is, how much of your expectations for Jano are effectively going to be colored by how much he can stay on the field? Because we know he is very talented. He's one of the few people who pulled the ball with consistency last season, but he also got injured. And it's so weird because so many of those injuries are like, it's not like he's, you know, injuring the same body parts over and over again because he's like pulling his oblique or pulling his hamstring or whatever. He's getting like these bizarre balls off the knobs of the bat, or, you know, foul balls, or being hit on the backswing. Like, it's just, I suppose that's the nature of being a catcher when you're actually behind the plate, but when he's behind the batter rather and is crouched in the position, but when he's at the plate and getting hit by random balls, it just seems like you can't really draw too many straight lines between all these occurrences.
Yeah, that's a big one, right? We know that this is an important year for Jansen. He is going to be a free agent at the end of this season. His value for the Blue Jays, obviously on the field, he is a tremendous catcher and a very important offensive contributor, especially when it comes to pulling the ball, when it comes to having that pop. He had another extra base hit today, which was also smoked at 102 miles per hour. So it seems like, you know, he's in a very good spot right now, healthy and ready to go. That said, the element of luck is always something that we need to consider with Jansen. He's a gritty player. He goes after it, and sometimes he's going to end up with these odd injuries, whatever they may be. I will say this, Sho. I was looking at his numbers from spring training as a whole. It's a very small sample size, but in 9 at-bats, this was the first time that he struck out. That is, again, small, but it does show that his hand-eye coordination and just his overall feel at the plate right now is there. And it's pretty early in the spring for a guy to be hitting like that. The double that he hit today, again, was pulled, right? So his game is very much on point. He is running well. He is catching extremely well. We all know that he's an extremely valuable piece in that front too, because he basically knows all of the pitchers on this club, and he keeps learning and he keeps evolving. And he's a guy that pitchers feel very, very comfortable pitching too. So all of that is on display here. And he seems to be well on his way for another career season. Luck will be the ultimate difference maker here for Jansen.
I'm sure he is hoping for a career year, given that he is a UFA at the end of the season. So career years, I'm sure, can never hurt, as we have discussed often when it comes to the Leafs, for example, when he's signing big-time contracts in your career years, which we've talked about a lot this season. But I think Danny Jansen is going to obviously factor in a major way into what this team does. And, you know, him and Alejandro Kirk, even though we did see Jano mostly today. All right, let's chat a little bit about the pitching before we go, Julia. And Bassett, first of all, starts. So he gives up the 3 runs in the first inning. A 2-run shot to Luplo, as we discussed. He was kind of shaking his head in that, like, annoyed manner that he does when he's not super pleased with his delivery.
Classic.
Yeah,
like, Chris Bassett.
I said this many times to you, but he always looks so pissed off at himself.
Yeah.
Always. Like, he always looks like he is one step from having a meltdown on the mound at himself, essentially, and at no one else. He did that a few times today. Whenever things go well for starters this early in the spring, it's funny because we always say great, and whenever they go really poorly, you can always be like, well, it's just the spring,
it's
right?
It's okay.
It's almost like there's no way to lose. But with Bassett, I do admit I'm not too worried. Schneider was saying post game just a couple minutes ago that he is not, you know, the velo was there, they're working on the changeup, so it was more about repeatable motions than actual results. And I'm sure the shaking of the head with Bassett is him just being a competitor. But, you know, is anyone worried about Gerrit Cole after he gets Vogel bombed yesterday? I don't think so.
Not even Cole, apparently, is worried about that.
Apparently. So I'm guessing no one is that worried about Bassett. I'm not really either. I think really, like I said, it's at this point, it's just about him getting into a groove. And he was in a groove in his first appearance about 4 days ago. So I don't know. He bounced back pretty well. He went 3 innings instead of 2. So I don't know if you're any more worried than I am.
Yeah. So everything basically according to what was scheduled, right? He was scheduled to go 3 innings. He got the 3 innings. He upped his pitch count a little bit. He got to 46 today, which was more than he did last time out. We are going to see Chris Bassett talk to himself a lot, shake his head a lot. It's fascinating to me that works for him, but it does, right? That type of tough love on himself on the mound while the game is happening, it just works for him. It does help him get back into the zone. And so I don't think anyone is super concerned about that either. And the home run, it's a righty-on-righty changeup. It's something that, like you said, John Schneider is pointing to as something that, you know, needs to be worked on and stuff. We understand that. That's fine.
Right.
This is a different situation as, say, a guy like Bowden Francis, who also pitched today and pitched extremely well, or even a Nate Pearson and Yasir Zulueta, who are coming in here and every single appearance that they make is essentially an audition, right, for either a role in the bullpen or a starting role. So let's just say that Chris Bassett is in a different position as guys like that, and he will get a little bit more leeway here. And if he got beat around by Luplo here, no one is going to be extremely, extremely concerned at this point.
So you mentioned Bowden Francis. And I actually believe of all of the observations I had about this spring game, and again, 6-2, you take everything with a grain of salt in spring, I think his play today was the most interesting to me, beyond Bassett, beyond IKF, beyond any of the prospects we got to see in small doses. So he comes in for a few innings, fastball up to 96, 97 mile an hour. I still think he's earned a place, Jules, in the bullpen as the long man, the guy who is going to be the first person asked to be the sixth member of the rotation in case of injury. But at the same time, I also wonder, like, I wonder what the corresponding move would be if you felt he needed to start the season in the majors, just because we've talked about this a little bit before, but Mitch White is out of options, right? So because he is out of options, and he was out of options last year, and he did get exposed to waivers, and he obviously was not claimed, so the Blue Jays kind of snuck him through there to the Bisons, where he finished the season. I only bring it up because they were able to do that because he was playing badly, right? He was playing really poorly last year. If he plays even kind of halfway decent, and even for Mitch White, the fastball velo was up a little bit. I think it was up to about 95, 96 miles an hour as well. I'm not saying in any way, shape, or form that Mitch White should be the guy over Bowden Francis, but I do wonder if to start the season, Francis starts in the minors and Mitch White in the majors only because of roster manipulation. Or, and I mean, you mentioned other guys, Zulueta, Pop we saw today, Pearson we saw at the very end. But I wonder if they're the corresponding moves in terms of making sure Bowden Francis is on this roster, because he is, I got to say, so far, he's been one of my favorite storylines of the spring, and I think he is very deserving of a spot on the major league roster.
And again today, right? He pitched extremely well today. Last time out, a two-run outing. It was a little iffy at points, but he really does bounce back, ups his pitch count, which again is something that we're going to look out for in his development here. Is he going to be in the bullpen, or is he going to be asked to be a starter? It will also depend on Alek Manoah's health, and I think that the corresponding move show that you were talking about is going to hinge pretty heavily on who the number five starter is and who the Blue Jays can actually count on to be that number five starter.
So let's say Manoah is on the IL to start the season. Let's just say, are you comfortable with the fifth starter being Bowden Francis?
I would say right now he would be the best option. I mean, the spring is still young, of course, but he seems to be doing enough to at least put himself in that position. We saw a little bit more of the splitter that he's working on today in order to, say, round out his repertoire and make a little bit more starter-like, and good results. Six of the 42 pitches that he threw were splitters. Two of the strikeouts came on the splitter, actually, one on a foul tip and one looking. It's very, very encouraging to see not only that the velocity is up, but also that this newfound splitter is working and it's being incorporated slowly into his repertoire. And again, if you look at Alek Manoah in the uncertainty surrounding his shoulder problem, which right now they're calling it soreness, the fact that it happened last season as well, you look at the Blue Jays options, it does seem like Francis would slide in pretty well there. And let's not forget that when he was called upon last season for the Blue Jays, whether as a starter or out of the pen, he delivered as well. So yes, Manoah still has the inside track here to be the number five starter, but if for some reason spring doesn't progress the way that it should for Manoah, or if this shoulder issue is something that lingers, then I would feel very, very comfortable giving the ball to Bowden Francis.
Yeah, I don't think a signing, let's say Manoah is not ready, I don't think a signing of Blake Snell is particularly, or even Jordan Montgomery or any other free agent pitchers out there. I don't know if like Johnny Cueto is still out there. That was someone a texter had suggested. Jason from Markham had suggested that in the pregame show. But I don't know if any of those guys are out there. But I'm not sure a signing of any of those guys is incoming. And because again, Ross Atkins spent the large majority of this offseason saying the biggest additions are coming from the internal options. And that, I think we all kind of viewed that as being, oh, he's talking about Addison Barger. He's talking about Aurelvis Martinez. He's probably also talking about Ricky Tiedemann, who we haven't really discussed. And
sure,
Tiedemann's start to the spring has gotten a little delayed because of the hamstring thing he suffered right before he was going to have his first start of the spring campaign. And that's kind of gotten moved back. If you were listening / watching today, Arden saying on Sportsnet telecast that Ricky Tiedemann, much like Manoah, probably gonna see where they're at on Wednesday. Tiedemann might be facing some live batters on Wednesday before they kind of ramp him back up to maybe getting in some, into some game action. But I mean, if it's not Ricky Tiedemann and it's not an outside option, like if there's not, there are not that many other options, perhaps we might have thought, Julia, it could have been Yariel Rodriguez,
perhaps,
who was one of the few options as well, but he had had some back spasms and was a scratch. I think he was scheduled to face a bullpen today in some side sessions, so probably not going to see Rodriguez for a little while. But, I mean, you also don't give a five-year deal to a guy who hasn't started in over a year without thinking he's going to have like some kind of significant role, I would imagine.
Yeah, and again, show that the spring is definitely young, but especially when it comes to pitchers, any type of delay at any point in March can mean that they're going to be delayed to start the actual regular season as well. It's so tricky, and the buildup really needs to be well planned out in order to avoid more significant injuries and more lingering injuries. And so when you look at guys that have had any sort of setback at this point, yes, there's still time. The Blue Jays are also going to be very, very cautious because it's a long year. And for what they're trying to do, it's best to be sure that everyone will be healthy for when the games start to matter a little bit more.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think they're not going to take any major risks with really anyone, not even just young guys or veterans or what have you. They're not going to take chances with anyone, nor should they. Just over a week into, or almost exactly a week, I suppose, into spring training, since the spring got started last Saturday. I did want to ask you before we go about a couple of the pitchers we briefly talked about, mostly Pearson, Zulueta, and Pop, who all have been, I think, considered to being battling for that last spot. Nate Pearson, I would say of those three, Nate Pearson probably has the inside track to being the last guy out of the bullpen. Like if you're only looking at those three, it could be someone else entirely. Like it could still be Mitch White, for example, and there could be two spots up for grabs. But I think the way you lay out the bullpen, probably, especially now that Eric Swanson has returned from a scary incident with his son, but it sounds like he's going to be okay. So Swanson comes back to the team. You think Swanson's going to have that last spot as well, like he did for much of last year. So if that's the case, then probably only one spot available, like up for grabs, quote unquote, at the end of the bullpen. I think it's Nate Pearson, but Pop and Zulueta going to be knocking on that door because Pop had some good moments last year. Zulueta, we haven't seen at the majors, but Pop had some good moments before it kind of imploded for him, and then he got sent down.
That's right.
In the same way for Mitch White, but I'm guessing I'm probably going to go with Nate Pearson in a week into spring training.
Right now, yeah, I would say so. The velocity is certainly there, and he is slowly working on the command and, you know, just the shape of his pitches, the movement of his pitches, and it seems like we are seeing improvements here. For a guy like Zulueta, the command it doesn't seem to be there right now, and it seems like it would be a lot to ask him to just transfer to the major leagues for opening day. It's a tricky ask for any young pitcher, but when it comes to Zulueta, the amount of injuries that he's had and the setbacks and all of that, yes, we are looking at him very closely right now because, you know, it seems like it's two seasons now that we are saying that he's very, very close to getting there.
I feel like it's been way more than two seasons at this point.
It's so odd, right? But there's been so many setbacks and so many injuries that it doesn't seem like he will be ready for opening day or even for the first half of the season. And we saw it today again. He threw 14 pitchers and six of them were strikes, right? So the command is a little iffy, and he will have to work on that and actually get that in a consistent place before he can be considered for a major league spot. Zach Pop is still kind of a question mark to me, Sho, because we have seen very, very good moments from him, and we also have seen things just get away. And so it's still early and difficult to actually pinpoint what to expect. So I would agree with you that Pearson right now seems to be the guy that is ahead for that final-ish spot in the Blue Jays bullpen.
A lot still to look out for the bullpen, certainly for that last spot. Julia, before we go, in the last couple of seconds here, someone texted in, Julia, just found the best Brazilian bakery in Toronto. There's no name on this, so we'll have to get the location of this Brazilian bakery for you.
Please, please do. I'm all for it. Thank you very much.
Yeah, we appreciate it. We welcome all sorts of texts here on Jays Talk.
Seriously.
Not just baseball related. That's Julia Kreutz. I'm Sho Ali. That does it for us here on Jays Talk. Appreciate you being with us on Blue Jays Baseball, brought to you by by your local family-owned Crown Rust Protection. Protect your vehicle from rust today. For a special offer, find your local family-owned Crown at crown.com, Canada's number one protection. We're out of here. Back tomorrow for more Jays Talk following Jays Red Sox. We'll talk to you then.